You're listening to KBOO Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Trillium Public Charter School in North Portland. Enrollment for the 2019-2020 school year is now open for students K through 12 with an open house on February 21st at 6:30 p.m. More information online at trilliumcharterschool.org.
Thank you. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar in Portland. Underground hip-hop artist Serengeti, also known as Kenny Dennis, returns to Portland for one night only. Local artist Champion Loves You, Mosley Wata, and DJ Cars and Trains will also perform. Again, that's Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar, 2415 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello to all of my friends. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This is The Struggle, the show that platforms people doing good work in the community so they can tell you about their work and appeal to you to help support it because there are no individual solutions. So I'm going to let my guest introduce herself.
No, thank you. Thank you. So my name is Rochelle Dixon, and I would describe myself as a bit of a political agitator. So a lot of people know me for political work. Some people know me for my work in the community on food,
justice, land justice. So I'm really excited to be here tonight, and I appreciate you having me.
Thank you. So I know the broad topic that you wanted to come in on is to, yes, talk about the political work that you've done now and in the past and in the future, no doubt, but also the broader topic of, quote, faux progressives. So I'm actually going to let you roll it out in your conception so that we can talk about it on your terms.
Okay. So I am going to start by saying that I am confused. So I think of myself as a person that likes to see results. I think most of us do. And when it comes to folks talking about Oregon, they typically talk about Oregon being progressive, Portland being progressive, but yet we have the death penalty. We still have non-unanimous juries. I know that folks are starting to pay attention to that. We are number 49 in the United States for schools and graduation rates. And I don't know how much lower you can get than 49, but for some reason, we are there for people of color and disabled children and marginalized children. We have the Proud Boys and white supremacists and white nationalists marching in the street. We have a high infant mortality rate for people of color. We have racism in medicine. We have racism in a variety of different places. We have ableism all over. We have discrimination against trans and LGBTQ people. So I'm not seeing that progressive nature that just rolls out of folks' mouth when they think about Portland. What I'm actually seeing is a lot of faux progressive people who get on Facebook, social media, and talk about ideas and concepts that they think are popular and then perpetuate misinformation oftentimes about how easy or difficult it is to achieve those outcomes based on something they saw in a meme. This is highly problematic. It's just propaganda, same as it has been since the beginning of time. but it's much more effective when it goes over the internet. So we have people saying, oh, this is such a progressive place. I'd like for someone to show me where it's progressive, because I'm not sure if I'm in Portland anymore, or Texas. Mm-hmm. Heck, this could be Mississippi. If you look at the stats and the outcomes, if you look at how many disabled people and hearing impaired people are employed, if you look at the unemployment rate for trans people and LGBTQ people, especially trans people, this could be Mississippi. If you look at the education graduation rates, this could be Mississippi. I'm not sure where I'm at anymore. So I don't need anyone to tell me what progressivism means to me, because what it means to me is good, favorable outcomes for everyone. Yet, there are people who really oppose my definition, and I don't suppose that I have the perfect definition. For me, it's about having a form of government and practices that include stakeholders, that means the government, partnering with the community, that lifts, as they say, a rising tide lifts all boats.
Ideally.
That's not what's happening here. That is not what's happening here. So I want to know, where is the progressivism? Someone said it's in the auto insurance. That's what they said. But I'm
not
saying it.
Shout out to Flo.
I'm not seeing it. And so I want to push back that if you're number 49 in education, if half the streets are not accessible to folks that are disabled to even use a wheelchair to access them, if most of your disabled and hearing impaired community is unemployed, if most a good percentage of your young folks who are in school are homeless and dependent on subsidies and food subsidies, where is this progressiveness? Because I think what people really want is the capability of doing for themselves without having to depend on the government to say what you in fact need. So that's my thought on that. And I'm going to be quiet for a moment and let you actually say something.
it's cool. I platform people who are doing good work and have good things to say, and that is you. So I want you to shine. So if you're a star and you feel like blazing, go on.
Okay.
So I want to start off by saying shout out to all of my friends in Mississippi.
Okay.
Right? Because everybody in Mississippi deserves a decent standard of living. They deserve to have all of their basic needs met. And I'm sorry that you have a political system that is based in white supremacy, that allows for the austerity diet that you have been on for some time. And people in Mississippi absolutely deserve better than what they have, and so do people in Oregon.
I totally agree. And the reason why I use that state is because when you think of disenfranchisement, a lot of times you think of the South. Well, what I'm saying is that we are the north of the south.
Or the south of the north.
Yeah, we're the south of the north. Yeah,
whatever
you
backwards.
Want. Yeah. So we like to claim this ground that we can't honestly stand on. Mm-hmm. And so if I were to say to someone, well, you know, we're no more progressive than Mississippi, man, I would get an argument out of them. Mm-hmm. I really would.
Okay.
And they wouldn't be able to use numbers to back that up.
Okay.
I can use numbers to back up why this city is challenged. The city is challenged because of the educational system, because of the lack of employment opportunities, because of a variety of different reasons that you can actually go and look at.
Mm-hmm.
So don't use these words that are platitudes and flowery language to cover up the fact that while you're talking about our progressive system, we don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, after you get off social media, you want to blame the leadership that you have allowed to be in place. Whoever the leader is, you've voted for them, or you've tolerated them, or whatever the case is. It's really unfair to look at the leaders and go, well, this is a fine kettle of fish that you've gotten us in, because you've tolerated it. And for a long time, racism and white dominant culture was so acceptable. And now that we have a Trump administration, he's really convenient to blame it on.
Mm-hmm.
But if Trump were to leave today, we'd still have a white dominant culture. Mm. We'd still have to deal with white supremacy. This town has had a problem since the 80s and the 90s. We had the KKK here. Mm-hmm. We had a variety of different white nationalist group. I'm trying to think of the name of the groups, the skinheads, but they had a variety of different skinheads, mm-hmm. and a lot of them have left, but we've made it really comfortable for mm-hmm. them to be here. Mm-hmm. You can't blame that on leaders who've been in place for 6 months or a year to cure your white supremacy problem.
Okay. On that, I want to shout out my friend Walida and Marisha, mm-hmm. who does a talk and has done extensive research on the question of why there are so few Black people in Oregon. And just from hearing you talk about some of these disparities, I want to bring in the fact that the prime reason, from my reading of history, that people's living conditions are able to be so degraded over time and space is largely because of white supremacy and the sort of bill of goods that are sold to white people, particularly, you know, working and poor white people that get what they call a mental wage or a psychological wage. I'm looking at a picture of Frederick Douglass, and he might have been the one that talked about it. I have the Verso. This is not sponsored by Verso. Mm-hmm. But my friend got me the 2019 Verso Radical Diary. Anyway, the idea of the mental or psychological wage is the idea that is sold to disenfranchised, exploited white people to say, well, yeah, your living conditions are horrible, but you're
better,
white.
You're better than
So eat that for dinner, yes. Right? Because no matter how bad it is, you could always be Black.
Yes.
And that was something that to a large degree was accepted and perpetuated by white people who really had everything to gain by banning with Black people and seeing that their interests are actually tied with theirs, that their liberation is actually bound up together. But propaganda and culture that comes from birth, really, these are hard things to break through. Mm-hmm. So this is from what it sounds like to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like some of that residue, particularly in the Oregonian sense, because when this state was founded, Black people weren't even allowed here. This is what Walida's research focuses on. And because that was never really dealt with or contended with, there was never any reparations for the terror that Black people were put through in the past and, you know, very recently. And because there's never been that time of reconstruction, so to speak, right, using a term from the South, reconstruction was also overturned and upended by the Klan, by the way. When you don't deal with it and you just sort of, you know, put it away, it has a tendency to you know, get stuffy, you know, in that closet that you're putting those skeletons in, and the chickens come home to roost. And it sounds a little bit like that. That's a little bit of what's going on here, what you're describing.
And it's also that, for example, in Portland, you'll have individuals who think that, oh, I'm a progressive. I live in Portland. This is great. And the people who live outside of Portland
are backward.
They're backwards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they live in these little small rural communities, and I know best. I'm a bit of an elitist, and I have an education, and my views are important, and theirs not so much. But when I go around Portland, I see things that are disenfranchising every day. So my mom passed away, but before she passed away, we lived in the Concordia District, and then she moved to Laurelhurst. Have you ever been through those Laurelhurst barriers, the little arches? Mm-hmm. They're like on 39th, mm-hmm. and I don't remember the other places. Where those were the barriers that said where Black people couldn't go, mm. and where if you crossed certain lines, you would be beat. and they had, for example,
isn't that like part of like the Sundown Towns?
This was even when that was going, there were Sundown Towns. You had to be out by a certain time.
Like Oswego, right?
But this was Portland, and yeah. This was if you, you were in that neighborhood, that once a week they picked a black family to assault. And so those, I still remember what those roads are. A lot of people don't even know.
I was going to say, why don't more people know? Did you learn this in school?
No, I learned it just being handed down from the community. And so for me,
that's a shame.
It's still shocking to see that.
That should be taught in schools from an early age.
We have Jefferson High School. And I know everybody loves Jefferson. They have fond memories of the school. But Jefferson was a slave owner. And Jefferson had a conversation, and someone said, you know, you should choose male slaves. He said, no, it's better to choose female slaves. Jefferson never purchased a slave. He inherited slaves. I think he started with around 30. And when he was finished, he had over 300, right? So the women that he had that were slaves reproduced, had families, over 300. That's what happened. So we have Jefferson High School. We have Custer Park. Why do we have Custer Park? Custer never lived here. Mm-hmm. He is responsible for, you know, part of the genocide of indigenous people. And progressives walk by those things every day, and I don't hear peep coming out of them. Mm-hmm. We have the death penalty here, and I don't hear peep coming out of anybody mm-hmm. about when to change it. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, yeah, but there's a moratorium on it. Mm-hmm. Sure. Had Newt Bueller won as governor, he said that he would get rid of the moratorium because the death penalty is law. So, do you really want your future, the future of this progressive state and this progressive city, based on who is in office for that period of time?
Right, it's a lives. Very dangerous game.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game. Why don't we get rid of the death penalty? Yeah. If you're so progressive, why don't we get rid of the death penalty? If we're so progressive, why do we have so few teachers of color? So I want to call out.
Thank you. I want to just give some background of the buzzword of the night, progressive, just so that you know what my working definition is and how I understand it. So oftentimes progressive gets conflated with liberal, and I think that's a mistake. These words do have meanings. They do have some core that I think we should be able to identify. So along the political spectrum, I think generally we would understand progressive to mean to the left of liberal. And because of the way that a dichotomy between liberal and conservative have begun to be solidified, sometimes that's all we understand. Sometimes they call it the Overton window.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And liberal and conservative are meant to represent sort of the closest to the center. Mm-hmm. There's also centrism, mm-hmm. right? And I think that is not a smart way to gauge these things. There are actual like social and political calculators for people in other parts of the world to understand where on the political spectrum these ideas in the U.S. context actually are. And what we might call a liberal in the United States is something that in other countries and other parts of the world that have not experienced an era of McCarthyism like we have in the United States, where the left was completely vilified and hunted down mm-hmm. and expelled, killed. I mean, let's go down the list. Mm-hmm. So we don't have the tradition of a strong left in the United States like in other parts of the world, in Africa, Asia, South America, Europe. So really what we would call liberal in other parts of the world, they would say, oh my God, that's like center right at least. Mm-hmm. And progressive is much more toward the center, because progressives for the most part are not at all ready to break out of a capitalist order. A progressive
usually is not ready to say, let's break with the war machine totally. Oh, a progressive today may not, and I want you to come in, a progressive today may say, I think that while I don't like Trump, I'm okay with invading Venezuela and ousting yes. Nicolas Maduro. That's a big problem.
I am so glad you brought that up, because just a few days ago, before things really got heated, maybe a week ago, I asked, what is a progressive?
Oh, great.
Man, the answers were all over the map.
It's a big problem. So
I said, well, can you believe someone is progressive and they could be racist? And then folks tried to redefine racism.
Oh, dear.
And I said, well, is someone a progressive? How would they feel about a woman's choice? Well, it became very, very fluid.
Like equivocating.
Yes. Mm. And I found that no one could adequately define the word progressive. Mm. And I would say that even if someone probably met most of what people think would be progressive, mm-hmm. That some people wouldn't call that progressive. I think I need a new word for myself. I think I need like radical progressive or something, because these progressives are not progressive enough for me. Mm-hmm. So I'm calling them faux progressives, mm-hmm. because I don't think they're legit. How can we have the death penalty?
Yeah.
How can we have no anti-war movement to speak of? There is a movement here, but it's very small.
It's very small.
It's very small.
Shout out to Hands Off Venezuela for a successful action last week. You know, I had two of the organizers, Candy and Russell, here mm-hmm. last week. So shout out to y'all. Y'all did incredibly well.
Yeah. But for years, my son is 20, and we've been at war the whole time he's been alive.
It's tragic.
And so where is that anti-war movement?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden people want to talk about universal health care. And I want to say, maybe if we could stop investing in the military-industrial complex, maybe we would have some money for universal health care.
Oh, my God.
Maybe we could have some money for crumbling infrastructure.
Everybody could have their own hospital.
Yeah.
Forget about health care. Everybody gets their own hospital for the amount that we spend on the war machine.
Yeah, and just think about the crumbling infrastructure, the bridges, the things that we would benefit from. Mm-hmm. But we keep paying for this war machine mm-hmm. because we keep inflicting bad policy on the world.
Yeah.
And then because we have bad policy, we need to protect ourselves from the potential that some of that bad policy will come back and affect us. Yeah. And it will. It absolutely will. It affects us. There are veterans shooting themselves in parking lots, veterans hospitals. Daily. There are more people who are dying. It's like 300 suicides a day. I know it's a crazy number. And you think that can't be right. And then you go look it up and you're like, oh, wow, that is right. I think that might be total suicides. And then the veteran suicide, it's still a very significant number. And this is the cost of war. And we're not looking at it. But then, you know, say someone who goes on Facebook and posts that they're progressive and this is the candidate they support. We don't ask any questions. I am guilty of that. So I amassed a bunch of friends that were progressive. And then I found out once I started asking questions that their values and my values didn't align. Mm-hmm. At all.
Okay.
I found out that many of them, they were really flexible on the choice question, a woman's choice. They were like, well, it depends. I'm like, it depends? What does it depend on?
Wow.
They were really unconcerned about the fact that we have the death penalty. Many of them were not aware that we had the death penalty. Mm. They considered the moratorium as something that would be forever and a day. This has been challenged. Trump declared an emergency, and I don't know if you heard this. It seems like nobody heard it. I had to ask someone, am I hearing things? Because Trump said death penalty and drug war and China, and I was like, wait a minute, what did I just hear? So Trump talked about the death
penalty. China executing people who are found with drugs.
Yeah, but I think Trump thinks it's a really grand idea.
Well, he does. No, it's true.
So the death penalty has some urgency to be addressed. It's a social justice issue. Who gets the death penalty? Mm-hmm. Poor people, people of color, marginalized people. Mm-hmm. So how can you call yourself progressive? I'm just going to call people and say, hey, if you're a progressive, are you working on any of these issues? And if you're not, maybe you should stop labeling yourself this way. Yeah. I have started to say labels are for laundry, because I want to know, what do you believe? I was wrong. I didn't ask. Oh, you're progressive. Great. I'm progressive. And then I found out, well, yeah, you don't even care about the death penalty. Yeah. You don't care what's happening overseas. Mm-hmm. You don't care. And you won't stand up to people who talk about divesting in Israel because you're afraid that some of your friends might say that you're anti-Semitic. I've never been anti-Semitic.
Well, you see what just happened to Ilhan Omar.
Yeah, there are issues there. They're not people standing up for her.
People are I am, but you know, there are people who are.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But not enough.
Not enough. Mm-hmm. Not enough, because you can understand that the policies need to be changed without being anti-Semitic. So I think those are two different issues, but we need to have a understanding of what it means to make progress.
Okay.
Because this isn't it. Being number 49 in education, having people marching the street that are white nationalists, we still have a police brutality problem. We have many issues. I don't want to ever hear anybody who's not working on any of these issues tell me that they are progressive.
Okay.
Ever again. I really mean it.
No, I like that. No, I think one of the issues, I'm thinking about this as you're saying this, and I'm thinking about organization and a lack of a party that is progressive that would be able to give some definitions, some working definitions, a platform, a list of goals that are explicit, so that people can decide whether or not that's something that they can support, and then they can choose to join it. But in my opinion, and this is with all due respect, please be able to hear this, I think that the two-party duopoly, the chokehold that there is in this country, really stymies the potential for people to break out and decide a party platform. And I think for all of the problems, and there are many, of the Libertarian Party and the Green Party, at the very least, they put issues in the front. They'll tell you what they believe in, what their agenda is. They have relatively democratic processes in terms of drafting and implementing their platforms, whereas with the Democrats and the Republicans, that's a very difficult thing to be able to develop and maintain, because you may all agree that some policy should be enacted, some understanding should be universal by all members, but then you got AIPAC coming in, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee coming in, you have big oil, big pharma, and they say, oh, that thing that you all passed, no, we're not doing that. And then the politicians who they pay for, really, I mean, they turn around and they either denounce what they, you know, stood for or signal that they would stand for, or they go back on what they've said, and people are looking around like, how did this happen? How did this happen? It happens because we have a chokehold on the party system here, and people aren't able to express any other political will or our set of ideas outside of sort of what's been mapped out for all of us. I think that's primarily the thing that is stymieing people who are much more along the lines of what you're describing. They don't have that.
Well, you know, I tend to agree with you that the two-party system has its challenges. The issue that I want to expose is that within the party, there is still a range. So you have Republicans who are conservative. You have Republicans who are more liberal. You have Republicans who are alt-right. You have the same thing in the Democratic Party. You have Democrats who are very centrist or a liberal. Then you have conservatives, and you have leftists. So these parties are made up of people.
Yeah.
These parties are made up of people. And I've heard a few folks say, well, the party.
Do you think that's a shortcoming or a benefit?
That the party's made up of all of those different. Yeah. I think it's a benefit. But what I'd like to see
A shortcoming.
I would like to see more political engagement at every end of the spectrum in every party. So I don't think I like the chokehold part, you know what I'm saying? But I do like the fact that each party can welcome folks that may disagree on certain aspects of it. But the party is made up of people. So if you have people who come to the party and then expect the party to behave differently than they would, that's problematic. And here's what I mean by that. So someone said to me, I said something, and it was the truth. It was the truth. I have no reason to make up any stories. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, if you keep saying that, you're going to shorten your political career. I didn't respond back. First of all,
Do you want to give a name?
No, because I think this is just indicative of how a lot of people feel. Okay. Though even though this one person versed it, and I wanted to go back and say, I don't have a political career. Yeah. I am not a politician. Great. I'm a community advocate. All I do is figure out what the problem is, what bucket to put the water in, and mm-hmm. how to carry the water. Mm-hmm. The minute I cannot advocate for my marginalized communities, I'm out of here that day. So please don't anybody tell me that I'm a politician. A politician is different from what I do. I have a little low level position. It's just right above the dog catcher, right? Right above the dog catcher. Maybe right
below. Shout out to all the dog catchers. We love you. Thank you for your work. If you're not organized, get organized. I can put you in touch with a union organizer to raise your wages and improve your benefits.
But
go on.
If you are not advocating for your community, go home. Mm. And the statement that I made that was offensive was sit down. I would like to say something more generous than that, but since we are on, you know, it's still the family hour, I won't. But anyway, sit down. We don't need
you. We have a dump button.
So. I know. I'm not gonna say it. But if you can't advocate for your community and mm-hmm. you can't be honest anymore, it's time for you to go home. Mm-hmm. I will just say that. If my honesty is offensive to you, mm-hmm. then I'm sorry. Yeah. That's your problem. It's not my concern that you're upset that I told the truth. I'm going to keep telling it, and I'm going to get louder and louder and louder and louder.
So is this something?
We need to stop saying that it's okay for disabled children to be sent home from school because they don't have adequate aids in the school. We need to say that the graduation rate for people of color is unacceptable. 40% of those kids that don't graduate will end up in the prison complex. That's what will happen. And then a small percentage of them, if they manage to graduate later on, end up with military positions, because sometimes that's their only opportunity. The U.S. government...
The poverty draft.
Yeah.
100%.
The U.S. government welcomes that, right?
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because, hey, we've got a space for you. And years ago, they used to recruit from the high schools, right? So we don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But it looks really attractive if you're working at McDonald's, perhaps, and you look at this wage that seems to be comparable, mm-hmm. but what you don't know is this military person is risking their life, and it's, you know, 80 hours to 120 hours a week.
And you might die.
You might die, yeah. But when you're a young person, that, you know, that death thing is kind of like in the back of your mind. I have a 20-year-old son, so I know that, you know, he's not oftentimes thinking of the consequences for that kind of behavior. But we need to say these things. We need to talk about white fragility. Every time I stand up to talk about marginalized people, someone wants to say that perhaps that shouldn't be a subject I'm going to be talking on. But I'm going to keep talking on
right? I want you to keep talking. I want to say, while you read the note, we got an audience question. While you read it to yourself, I just want to plug an event on Monday in Salem. And it is a rally that is going to be led by educators, and they're going to be calling on the state to give full funding so that some of the issues that you're talking about can begin to be improved on. And it's not a Band-Aid by any means. If you ask me, I say there needs to be progressive taxation, certainly a marginal tax rate. I'm very unapologetic about saying that we need to be taxing the rich. I know that, you know, maybe some people that are going to be leading the rally are not ready to say that. I understand. I have revolutionary patience. It's okay. But I just wanted to plug it. So if people want to come on Monday, there are going to be caravans and buses that I think are going to be leaving from PAT, the Portland Association of Teachers, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Jefferson Wilson and the third school. I'm afraid to say because I'm not sure of it.
Okay.
Do you know?
No, but I can link everything in the show notes.
Okay, great. Because so, I know Jefferson and Wilson for sure. But
Jobs with Justice is going to be having a caravan leaving from the parking lot. You can ride with me if you want to. There are three seats in my car. So if any listeners want to ride with me to Salem and demand free funding, you know, reach out to KBOO.
I want to say that funding, mm-hmm. that's also an excuse. Look what we have funding for.
Sure.
So there was a nonprofit that just got $1.3 million, I believe, for job creation. And the jobs that they were creating were five warehouse jobs. Now, I'm all for job creation. But that adds up to $260,000. What happened to the rest of the money? If we're actually going to have these programs, let's make sure that we're spending our money wisely and be frugal. I'm cheap. I'm proud of that. I'm frugal. Let's spend our money wisely. We can't say that we don't have money for education and then we have money for all these other tax breaks. Mm-hmm. We can't say it. That's not the problem.
Tax breaks are not free.
Yeah, they're not.
Family.
It's like, what are your priorities? And I've in the past had a few folks that said, well, this is my priority. And I'm like, show me your checkbook.
Ooh.
And show me where you spend your time at. And I'll tell you what your priorities are.
Oh, wow.
It's very, very clear where you spend your money and where you spend your time. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows where I spend my money and where I spend my time. That's what's important to me. So this note that just was passed.
It's an audience question.
Yeah, an audience question was in regards to the death penalty. A caller, his name is Dempsey, wanted to remind people about Trump endorsing the death penalty after the Central Park mm-hmm. Five incident. Thank you for that comment because I hadn't even recalled that. Was that something that you remembered?
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. So for everybody, I'm from New Jersey and a longtime reader of the New York Post, and shout out to Sean King and Juan Gonzalez, who have worked for the New York Post. Anyway, Trump took out full advertisements in the paper saying that five young black men who were wrongfully, you found later, accused of sexual assault and rape of a young white woman in Central Park. At the time, he went out of his way, and this was in the 90s. I want to say 97. I might be wrong. Please forgive me.
Still a Democrat?
Oh, yeah. Back then.
Uh-huh. Back then, okay.
Okay, you said it, not me. You told me you don't want to talk about that.
I'm
before
just
the show? Okay, I'm respecting
saying.
Your boundaries. You know I'm ready.
I appreciate that, but I just wanted to point out that since we're talking about faux progressives, that this man used to call himself a Democrat.
Yeah.
And look at what he is capable of doing.
Yeah. He was
we
very
need
open
to ask
about that.
More questions about what do you believe in.
Uh-huh.
And don't vote for someone who can't tell you what they believe in. They need to be able to tell you what they believe in. Don't believe the label, I'm progressive.
Sure.
Yeah, what are you doing about the death penalty?
Yeah.
I'm progressive. What are you doing about the imbalance of educator to administration power? What are you doing about students who aren't having a graduation rate? Mm-hmm. What are you doing about the disabled students who are kicked out of school?
Very important.
Because they don't have AIDS. Yeah. They don't have the, what are you doing
about these?
These
are questions that have to be asked. I appreciate that you're asking them because if we're not brave enough to tell the simple truth about these things, we're going to be in a world of hurt. And I think Trump is a great example.
Aren't we there now?
It can get a lot worse than this, and I actually think it will, but that's another show.
I think it will get worse too.
Yeah.
And this is also I want to call I I want to call out the people who are calling themselves progressive to answer this question for themselves.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because this community is going down.
Yeah.
This community is going down. So just giving yourself a pep rally every morning, telling yourself that this is great, this is not great. This is definitely not great.
So just so that the viewers, or excuse me, the listeners know that I also post everything. I'm recording on video as well, and I'll post it to my YouTube, youtube.com/AlyssaPariah, whatever you want, you know. So what I was talking about was before the show, we established that we weren't going to be talking about the Democrat Party and your experience necessarily, only to the extent that you want to because of extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, because
so I was ready to plug one of my favorite books. It's called The Democrats, A Critical History by Lance Selfa. And I'll talk about it another day.
Sure.
It's okay.
Yeah, you can definitely plug the book. Mm-hmm. But being that I participate in the party, it's the party that I've chosen to participate in because I think it's the best vehicle for getting the things done that I want to get done. And there isn't an opportunity for folks to go back and forth. I think it would be disingenuous for me to put out that information when it can't be countered. So I think that's unfair. But what I do think is fair is to call out anyone and everyone who thinks that by putting a Facebook post out that they're working on the issues.
Yeah.
This is why we're number 49 in education. That leads to these issues. And when we talk about, for example, gun violence, now you want to do something about gun violence. When it was affecting people of color, not so much.
Yeah.
We have people who have sympathy, great sympathy for people who have drug addictions. When it was the crack addiction, not so much.
Yeah.
And so now we want to talk about progressive policies. We want to talk about treatment versus incarceration. But we've incarcerated tons of people. Senator Lou Frederick, great gentleman who has out, you know, the I believe it's SB 420.
That's Senate bill.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 420. So it's the marijuana expungement
mm-hmm.
bill. That's great that it's number 420.
Sure. I'm sure he was waiting for his turn.
Yeah, they had to wait for the exact day for that
sure,
to happen.
Sure, sure.
But all these people are benefiting from marijuana being legal.
Meanwhile, there are black people languishing in prison off of small amounts that they had on
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Yeah, all those people need to be exonerated.
And in addition, there are the folks that can't get jobs, and people think, well, in Portland, it's not such a big deal. Not everybody who came here still lives here. Some people are not eligible for financial help, things like food stamps, because they have a drug charge. I know someone who has a master's degree, but was told that they can't get a promotion because they have a small marijuana charge from like 10, 12 years ago. Mm. So these are the things that we need to work through. But I want to ask you, who's working through these issues?
Yeah.
In this case, Senator Frederick has been doing this for years. Mm. If Portland was half as progressive as they said they were, these people, he'd have been done years ago. This is not the first time he's introduced this in various versions.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened the first 2-3 years he introduced this?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as marijuana was made legal, he introduced this. What happened? So we have people who are, somebody's lying is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say somebody's lying.
Well, I think most people are lying. So thank you for bringing up drug charges and marijuana being legalized. So to link back to the audience question. So thank you very much, Dempsey. I want to say that what Trump is referring to when he praises China for executing drug dealers and people who are found with drugs, it's very important to note that the people there and other countries that I assume he also respects for doing the same thing.
North Korea.
They do that to people who are doing low level. If they were smart, what would they do? They would find out who their connect is. Who are you buying your weight from? Who are they buying their kilos from? Who is sending them? And you go up and up and up to cut off the head. But that's not what happens. It's just quite simply, if you're found, you get executed. But it doesn't do anything to alleviate the poverty and the disenfranchisement that leads to people that decide that it may be worth the risk of selling drugs or moving drugs because they lack other opportunities to be able to make a living in other ways. And so I think that's very important. And so to connect that to Dempsey's question in terms of Trump's hypocrisy and how he also supported the death penalty and advertised his intent to do whatever he could to encourage the execution of five wrongfully accused black men, I think that it's so much of what he does is political theater. You know, he doesn't even want you to take him seriously. He wants you to be distracted by how ridiculous he is, because then, you know, maybe you'll be so caught up in the ostentatiousness of it all that you won't attack the policy itself. And that does seem to be the thing that bothers so many people who don't have my political persuasion, you know, that don't have a Marxist analysis. They look at Trump, and what they dislike so much about Trump is that he's so rude, that he's so brash, so haughty. That's what they don't like about Trump. But the policies themselves, it's almost like they turn a blind, or maybe not turn a blind eye, but they certainly don't make that the center of their ire. And I think that speaks to what you are getting at earlier.
Exactly. So for example, I'm thinking, there are so many things I'm thinking, so I know I'm all over the place, but hopefully I'm communicating something that resonates with a few folks, is that, for example, we're talking about the children who won't get back to their families, and that is, of course, a form of genocide.
You're talking about like at the border.
Yeah, the border.
Children in the Central American caravan.
And so the faux progressives are really upset, as they should be. However, were you upset when it happened to the indigenous people?
Re-education schools.
I am named mm-hmm. after my great-grandmother, who was locked in the Indigenous Bureau of Indian Affairs wow. school. Okay. I'm sorry. So what about that? You know, this has never happened before. It's unprecedented. What are you talking about? It's unprecedented. Mm-hmm. You just didn't worry about it when it happened to indigenous people. You didn't worry about it when it happened to African American people. It's happening to African American people now. So, you know, there aren't enough foster homes, right?
I know.
Do you know that children are being put in unsafe homes? Now, I'm not saying this because it's an opinion. I'm saying this because this information has come out. It's been in the newspaper. It's been in public. Their own audits.
Yeah, shout out to Teresa Rayford, one of my political partners, because you helped to get those audits ordered in the first place. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. And so it's not an opinion. This is fact. Mm-hmm. But I don't hear anybody talking about it. Some days I think, well, did I make it up? Or did they miss hearing this? Mm-hmm. Where is all this progressiveness where you care about the children? Oh, okay, so you don't care about the black and brown children or the children who perhaps are white or whose parents are drug addicted and yeah. they end up in the system. Mm-hmm. Those children you don't care about. Yeah. They're right in front of your face. Yeah. They're 5 minutes away from you. Mm-hmm. You can jump in the car, go down and volunteer, become a foster parent, or just decide to participate in their lives, volunteer at the school, but you don't do squat. Mm. You don't do anything. Yeah. So as I said, I'm putting this out there, so I hope people are listening on this radio show, because as God is my witness, not a single person better come up to me and talk about their progressiveness if they're sitting down on their
laurels.
Bum.
on their laurel hearse.
To bring it back. I don't want to hear about it. Mm. Tell me what you're doing. Okay. Don't tell me what you think should be done. Because who do you think is going to do it? Yeah. There are so many things I want to do. I can't do them all, sure. right? So don't tell me that this is really important to you and you go out there and protest once a year when there are kids right now in the Department of Health and Human yeah. Services that need your help and you haven't done squat for them.
So with DHS, I want to actually shed some light on how that process can work for people who are listening that are hearing that and want to take your advice seriously and really want to take that up. I would say absolutely learn about the process of advocating for children that are in DHS in those systems, because they absolutely do need people who have their best interests at heart, because we know that there are far too many people that do not have children's best interests at heart that end up being in their lives. And I'm so grateful to people that want to give their time and energy to helping to save some of these babies. So that's one. And then in terms of what you were getting at before about the sort of selective outrage on the other side of sort of who the victim is, I also want to say who the victimizer, because Trump's actual policies are not drastically different from Obama before him, or Bush before him, or Clinton before, and so on and so on. I think that a lot of the outrage, and I would say it's righteous. I want people to fight against the assertion that we should be looking at people who have everything in common with us as working people that are coming up in the caravan, that we're meant to look at them like a threat. Like, they absolutely are not. It's the perpetrators that are threatening us, and I think we would do very well to treat it like that. But again, I think that the veneer, the attitude, is so important to people that they will overlook when,
yes,
Obama, Bush, Clinton do a thing, but because Trump is so rude about it, now it's kicking up dust. And I think that's a big problem.
I think it's a problem too. I actually had to tell people that Trump did not invent racism. So they want to talk about Trump's policies toward people of color and marginalized people. And I'm like, people, I've been living under those policies all my life, under every administration. And that's why I'm irritated at this point, because I've been voting Democrat since I was able to vote. Mm-hmm. And I was voting Democrat because I thought that best aligned with my values, and that those values would be the values that would get me an education, that would help uplift my community. And what I'm finding out is I've been tricked. I did not ask enough questions. So I will freely admit that I was wrong and did not ask enough questions.
So what kind of questions would your young self ask if you could speak to her?
I would be asking, what do you believe in? How would you go about making changes, for example, in immigration policy? I married an immigrant, and I had to do that lovely INS interview.
Ooh. Oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. That mm-hmm. was interesting. Mm. It did not go well.
Oh, wow.
It ended well, but it was very, very stressful. I don't remember how many thousands of dollars it cost. It, wow. I blocked it out for the most part. But I worked two jobs, wow, to pay for the cost of my now ex-husband immigrating. And though we're no longer together, I can say that he definitely was not any type of threat to the United States government. In fact, he is a United States government. He works for the United States government, but he was from the Middle East. And the flak that we faced, mm-hmm, was unbelievable. It even was problematic with my son, especially after 9/11. We were Homeland Security interviewed or wanted to interview my son.
Oh my God.
I was going through the airport. I was eating a Cinnabon. You know, Cinnabons, you have to get a Cinnabon when you're at the airport because you need something to do. So shout out to Cinnabon.
Oh my goodness.
Just get the small one though, because those things were loaded full of calories. So long story short, they were paging me, but I'm not that important that anybody should be paging me in the airport. So I wasn't listening. And then when I finally thought, well, I'm early, I'll just walk up to the gate, we'll sit down, and I'll just eat the Cinnabon. They were so mad, and they said they had to interview this person. And I just looked at them crazy, because I knew the moment it was racism. And I knew that they were only interviewing my son because of his name. So they said, yeah, we want to. I said, yeah, go right ahead. Here he is. And they looked out and down at him. He was like 1.5. I think, yeah, about, yeah, something like that. And they were so embarrassed. No, I think he was 2. I think he was 2 and 1 month. We were on the way to see my aunt who was ill with cancer, and I had to go and get my son frequent flyer cards just to be able to get on a plane. to not be interviewed. And then forget wrapping my hair. The name and the wrapped hair, oh, that was way too much. Mm-hmm. So I've experienced the Muslim hate, and I don't think we're doing enough about that either. Mm-hmm. I think I've waited for certain organizations that I thought were progressive to issue press releases or formal statements
denouncing
about
that
how
practice.
That's right. I haven't seen it yet. I've been waiting 2 years. So I don't, like I said, I want another person. Nobody better come up to me and talk about how progressive they are until they're working on something. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be my agenda, but work on some agenda. Work on something. Right now we're just labeling each other, and I didn't ask the questions. You probably didn't ask a lot of questions at one point too. But now I'm like, wait a minute, 49 in education? We have the death penalty? People were, you know, gun violence. We have, look at the homelessness.
Oh,
every
day.
At the homelessness. Mm-hmm. Our elected leaders are leaders for the people who are homeless as well. Mm-hmm. They're not just...
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Clinton Street Resistance Series. Every Monday night at the Clinton Street Theater, Monday, February 18th, Clinton Street Resistance will screen Do the Right Thing, the Spike Lee joint which follows a Brooklyn neighborhood's racial tension on a hot summer day. Again, Do the Right Thing, showing Monday, February 18th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 29th annual Cascade Festival of African Films, happening Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, now through Saturday, March 2nd. Most films will show at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, room 104 at PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street,